Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel, Campfire Tales. Tonight's terrifying story is about this Lone Park Ranger who was out with volunteers looking for this missing hiker in Olympic National Park in the state of Washington. And all hell breaks loose. It's time for some pumpkin spice. That's right. God, that's good, and I love fall. Even though you're probably hearing this in January, right now it's October. Ahead of schedule, baby. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And we'll see you in a couple of days. I've been with the Park Service 19 years. You learn pretty quick that most disappearances aren't mysteries. People get tired, take a wrong turn, and panic. They get wet, cold, scared, and we find them. Sometimes a few miles off trail, sometimes right where we already looked. Most of the time, there's no reason. But what happened in June of 2019 doesn't fit any of those categories. On paper, it's just another missing hiker found deceased. In reality, it's the reason I still wake up when I hear rain against canvas. I was stationed out of the Ho Rainforest District in Olympic National Park. The call came in on a Sunday morning, a solo backpacker overdue from a two-night trip up near Seven Lakes Basin. Male, early 30s, experienced, healthy, used to long treks. His car was still parked where he had left it. He had checked in at the visitor's center on Friday, cheerful and well-prepared, according to staff. By 8:43 a.m., we had opened a missing persons file and launched a search. The first day went smoothly. The air that morning was thick, damp, almost heavy. Every sound felt muffled. Our boots, the radios, even the birds. We made our way along the Solduck Trail, methodically marking grids. About 5 miles in, we found clear boot prints in wet soil. Vask brand, size 10. Deep toe pressure, like someone moving uphill in a hurry. And then they just stopped. Not faded or obscured, stopped dead on a dry patch of pine needles. No continuation beyond it. No scuff marks, no turning circle, no second set. Just nothing. I marked the coordinates down and radioed them in. Dispatch logged it as a trail discontinuity, told us to continue the sweep. We bivouacked near Heart Lake that night. Fog rolled in thick as wool, cutting visibility to 10 feet. One of the volunteers swore she heard voices downhill, two of them. But when we called out, there was no response. Could have been an echo. Could have been nerves. We left a motion-triggered infrared camera at the main path before bedding down. When I checked the card later, all it showed was static gray for 30 seconds straight, like the sensor had shorted. By Monday morning, the rain came down steady. Radio change dropped to a few hundred yards at best. We split into two-person teams, leapfrogging drainages. The terrain up there plays tricks on you. Deep ferns, moss so thick it swallows sound. Everything feels like it's holding its breath. Around 11, I found something that didn't sit right. A small clearing. A cooking pot overturned in the mud. A length of nylon cord tied between two trees at waist height, as if someone was starting to set up a tarp and stopped midway. 10 yards beyond that, a single trekking pole driven into the ground like a marker. No pack, no food, no prints. The rain had only started an hour before, so it couldn't have been sitting there long. I photographed the site, logging the GPS, tried to radio it in. Static, then a half syllable that sounded like my own call sign being repeated back. I said it again, slower. The same sound came back, flat, wrong, like someone trying to mimic me through static. That night we regrouped near the ridge. No one had found anything new. The others joked less than usual, and no one lingered outside their tents. There's something about a clean disappearance that eats at people. It's not like finding someone hurt or gone. It's the not knowing what direction to even look. Command authorized an extended perimeter the next day. I volunteered to stay overnight near the site we had found. Standard containment watch. Nothing unusual. I set up a tarp, brewed coffee that tasted like smoke, and started logging hourly notes. At around 10 that night, I heard movement. Slow and deliberate. Not a deer. The cadence was all wrong. Too controlled. Too balanced. I called out, identifying myself as a ranger. No answer. The steps stopped when I did. Then I turned on my light. It was just the fog, white and endless. Eventually, the sound faded downhill towards the river. I wrote it off as nerves, but my hands were shaking when I wrote the time in my logbook. I didn't sleep much that night. At dawn, I found my bear canister moved about 3 feet from where I had left it. Not rolled. Moved. No claw marks or bite punctures. Just wet soil disturbed in a neat arc. I took a photo and didn't mention it to anyone. The canine unit arrived a few hours later. The handler said the dog caught a scent almost immediately near the cordline trees, but lost it within 20 yards. The animal wouldn't stop fixating upslope, ears back, tail down, low whining sound I had never heard from a trained search dog. We followed its lead to a cluster of old-grown hemlocks. Dense canopy, quiet as a tomb. In the center was a depression in the ground. Not a hole, not a burrow. Just a perfectly flattened oval of soil and moss, maybe 7 feet across. It looked like something had been lying there for a long time, then stood up and walked away without leaving prints. The dog refused to step closer to it. It circled the perimeter, whining. The handler finally clipped the leash short and pulled him back. I marked it as Point Alpha, potential rest site. Took samples. No visible animal sign. No smell of rot. No obvious reason for the dog's behavior. But I didn't like the feeling in my gut. By mid-afternoon, the sky turned slate gray. And the air pressure dropped fast. A storm was brewing in from the coast, thunder already echoing across the ridges. Command ordered us to head back before dark. We were maybe 10 minutes from camp when my radio clicked twice. No call sign, no open mic, just click, click. That's the signal for acknowledgement. I asked dispatch if they were trying to reach me. They said no. Then it clicked again, louder, almost right in my ear, like it came from my own handset. The dog barked once, sharp and startled, then whimpered. When I turned, the leash was slack, collar empty. The handler swore, shouting its name, but there was no sound except rain hitting leaves. We combed the area. No prints, no tufts of fur, no trail. It was as if the dog had evaporated into the mist. We left before the light failed. Back at base that night, command called it a containment error. Said the dog probably slipped its collar chasing game. No one argued, but everyone knew better. One volunteer mentioned hearing a faint metallic dragging sound outside her tent, like a chain. Nobody followed up on that either. They scheduled an aerial search for morning, but the ceiling was too low. Thick clouds pinned us to the ground, so we redeployed on foot. By day 4, exhaustion set in. The rain hadn't stopped once, I swear to God. My world had shrunk to the circle of my hood and the sound of water in my ears. But even through that noise, I started noticing something strange. Every time I stopped walking, the forest stopped too. No wind, no birds, nothing. Only the faint patter of rain, and beneath it, something else. A hum, low and steady, like a generator far away. I thought maybe it was tinnitus, but the others were hearing it too. You could tell by the way everyone moved quieter, glancing over their shoulders without saying anything. Around 2:30 that afternoon, one of the volunteers called in. They had found debris downstream from the Solduck Falls drainage. We converged there, all of us quiet. Caught against a fallen log, what was left of a backpack, rain cover, bright orange nylon, and torn. Inside, we found a crumpled energy bar wrapper and a small waterproof notebook, pages fused together. Only two words were legible on page 1. It's close. That changed everything. It wasn't just a lost hiker anymore. There was something else out there with him, maybe even before he vanished. That night we camped near the drainage mouth. I took first watch. It was dark, cold, the kind of wet that seeps through every layer of fabric. I logged my notes by headlamp, every detail, down to the minute. At 11:09 p.m., the motion sensor tripped. A faint tone from my handheld. I scanned with the floodlight. Nothing but mist. Then it tripped again, behind me this time. When I turned, the fog looked different, like it had depth, layers sliding across each other, almost like shapes moving inside it. Then everything went still. My radio popped with feedback, and through it, faint but clear, I heard my own voice repeating the time. 23:09. I shut it off and sat there for what felt like an hour, just listening. The rain never stopped. At dawn, we found the rest of the hikers packed downstream, caught under driftwood. The camera was destroyed. The phone was gone. We collected everything, photographed the site, and hiked back to base. Command brought in local law enforcement from Port Angeles out of an abundance of caution. One of the officers, an older guy who had worked mountain recoveries for decades, stood quietly at the edge of the clearing. He looked up at the trees for a long time before he spoke.
"Sometimes," he said, "the mountain keeps what it takes."
I didn't respond. Was he nuts? But I remember thinking he was right. That was day 5, the morning before we found what was left to find. And I'm telling you this because the official report only says body recovered. But it doesn't mention the missing radio logs or the sound the forest made when we found him. And it doesn't mention what was standing in the fog when I looked up from the trail. The next morning, I led the recovery team back towards the drainage where we had found part of the pack. Weather cleared just enough to see the ridgelines, that washed out blue that makes Olympic country look endless. It was the first day we had gotten decent visibility since the search began, and the forest felt different. Lighter at first, almost normal. But the silence never lifted. I spent half of my life in those woods. You learn to read the patterns without thinking. The way thrushes call before rain. The way the chipmunks vanish when a cougar's near. But up there that morning, it was just gone. No insects, no birds, no sound except our boots and the water dripping off the furs. I remember thinking, if there's a reason for quiet like that, we're already inside it. About a mile upstream, we started finding more debris. A ripped glove, a torn section of rain jacket snagged on a root. Then, near the bend of the creek, we saw it. What looked like a drag pattern through the gravel, leading off into the tree line. We followed it for 50 yards before we found the blood. I won't describe it. It was bad. But what I will say is this. Whatever happened, it didn't look like a regular animal attack. No tearing, no feeding sign. It looked deliberate, almost placed. The ground was soft, wet silt from the sun off, and I saw impressions. Not prints, exactly. The kind of thing you would miss if you weren't looking for them. Broad, shallow ovals, maybe 14 inches long, 5 or 6 inches wide. The spacing was wrong for a bear. Too even. Too clean. And there were no claw marks. When I crouched to take a photo, I realized the pattern was staggered. Left, right, like something walking upright. I didn't mention it. I just logged it, photographed, and moved on. The trail climbed steeply from there into heavier timber. You could smell the moss before you saw it. Dense, ancient forest. The kind that drinks sound. We reached a clearing where the slope leveled out into a ring of cedar. That's where we found him. Or what was left. Even now, I hesitate to call it a body. The report used the word remains. That was more accurate. The position wasn't natural. Face down, one arm extended as if reaching. But there was no sign of struggle. No scatter pattern. Nothing you would expect from an animal kill. Everything was contained, compact. The blood pattern was wrong too. It had pooled and soaked straight down, like he had been placed there after it happened. The coroner later ruled it massive blunt force trauma consistent with fall or impact. But there was no cliffs anywhere near that spot. When we called it in, command told us to secure the perimeter and wait for the forensics team. I remember standing there, staring at the tree line. It was the only time that day I felt watched. I know how that sounds, but it's not paranoia. There's a difference between fear and awareness. Every ranger I know has felt it at least once. That shift when the forest feels awake and paying attention. I kept scanning between the trees, and that's when I saw it. About 20 yards upslope, half in shadow. A shape. Broad shoulders, narrow waist, dark reddish brown. Not movement, exactly. Just stillness. Like it was part of the trees until you realized it wasn't. I blinked, and it was gone. Didn't make a sound leaving. Didn't disturb the brush. Just gone. I never told the others right then. I waited until the end of the day, when we had packed out and handed the scene over to the deputies. I asked one of them, the older sergeant, if they had seen anything unusual on a previous searches like this. He gave me a look I'll never forget. Not disbelief, more like recognition. Then he said quietly, "You hear the knocks yet?" "Huh?" I told him no. He nodded, and he said, "You will." That night, I couldn't sleep. We camped about a half mile down slope, all of us on edge. Around midnight, I heard something. A single sharp crack from the ridge above, like a tree trunk splitting. Then another, closer. Then two more, rhythmic, spaced out like signal knocks. I laid there listening, counting the intervals. Three knocks. Pause. Two knocks. Someone whispered from another tent.
"What the hell is that?"
Nobody answered. The knocks stopped after maybe a minute. The forest went dead quiet again, except for the rain starting up. I could have sworn I heard footsteps after that. Slow ones. Pacing the edge of the camp, but when I unzipped the tent, nothing moved. We hiked out the next morning. No one spoke much. The official cause of death stayed undetermined. They sealed the case by August. The gear was returned to the family. The notebook was logged as evidence and disappeared somewhere in the system. The page with the words, "It's close," never made it into the official report. But I kept the photos of the impressions. Not copies, originals from my camera, time-stamped, GPS-tagged. I looked at them 100 times since then, and I still can't make any sense of it. They weren't hoaxes. Too subtle, too imperfect. And they weren't bare. The stride length alone ruled that out. Whatever left them was heavy, bipedal, and smart enough to avoid leaving a full print anywhere near open ground. Over the next few weeks, more reports came in. Unofficial, word-of-mouth stuff. A fisherman near the Solduck River said he had heard wooden thuds echoing through the valley. A couple of campers found their food canisters stacked in a pyramid outside their site, No damage, no theft, just rearranged. Then a trail crew working 6 miles south of where we had found the hiker called in an unusual sighting. Something large moving through fog ahead of them, about 8 feet tall by their estimate. They said it moved too fast to follow. We logged it, forwarded it, and it vanished into the paperwork. When you work out here long enough, you learn what's myth and what's local shorthand. Every forest has stories, lights, shapes, voices. But the Olympic backcountry has more than its share. The Quinfault people talk about a wild guardian spirit that lives between the rivers. The old rangers, the ones who don't laugh when the subject is brought up, call it something else. They don't say Bigfoot. They just say him. After the 2019 incident, we started noticing changes along the certain corridors. Game cameras tripped without anything visible. Logs dragged across service roads overnight. We even found a section of trail signs twisted backwards on its post, wood grain splintered in a way I had never seen. I sent samples for lab analysis. The report came back inconclusive. Mechanical stress from unknown source. When I brought it up to my superior, he told me flat out to drop it. Said we had gotten our closure, and the rest was folklore contamination. I nodded, signed the report, and tried to let it go. The truth is, I still drive out there sometimes. I park near the Solduck trailhead and sit in the truck after dark, windows down, listening. Sometimes it's just rain. Sometimes it's the creek. And once, only once, I heard three knocks echo from somewhere across the valley. Evenly spaced, measured. Like someone waiting for a reply. I didn't reply. People like to think the wilderness is neutral. That it's just land and weather and wildlife, and whatever happens out there is explainable if you know enough. But I've been doing this too long to believe that. There are places in Olympic that don't want you there. Not in a human way, not out of malice, more like possession. The forest has rules older than any park boundary. And sometimes, when someone disappears, it isn't an accident. It's a transaction. 4 months later, the forest called me back. I told myself it was for follow-up work, checking trail erosion, confirming a boundary marker, but that was a lie. I needed to see the place again. Needed to know if what I had felt out there was real or a trick of exhaustion and fog. When I turned off Highway 101 and the radio hissed into silence, it felt like stepping out of time. The clouds sat low, pressing against the ridgelines. Rain came in fine needles that caught the headlights and turned the air into silver dust. Olympic was beautiful like that. Quietly merciless. At the ranger's station, nobody questioned why I wanted the overnight permit. The desk tech just handed me the clipboard and said, "Rain's moving in. Be careful up there." I signed the log. I wrote my name smaller than usual. By the time I had reached the Deep Creek trailhead, dusk had already swallowed most of the light. The woods smelled like rot and cedar, wet soil and cold stone. When I shut the truck door, the echo died instantly. It was the kind of silence that eats its own tail. The trio greeted me like an old wound, familiar but wrong. Moss glowed faintly in the dim light, slick as velvet. Every step sounded too loud. For the first mile, I kept my head down, counting switchbacks, testing the air. Nothing unusual. Then the quiet shifted. It wasn't a sound I'd heard so much as one I didn't. The forest should have been singing. Frogs, insects, wind through furs. Instead, there was only the patter of drizzle on leaves and the hum of my breath in my ears. I remembered the search. How the dogs refused to go past a certain bend. How the radio kept shorting out. We had written it off as interference from the ridges. Now walking alone? I knew it wasn't that simple. At the second mile marker, I stopped for water. The fog had thickened into a pale wall. My flashlight beam looked solid in it. I scanned the tree line, habit, and saw the prints. They weren't fresh, but the rain didn't fill them in yet. Too wide for a man, too long for a bear. I knelt, pressing my palm beside it. It dwarfed me. Something stirred deeper in the trees. A faint crack, then another, deliberate and heavy. I should have turned back. Instead, I spoke into the dark. "Just me," I said, voice cracking in the rain. "Passing through." No answer. Only the rhythm of water hitting leaves. I kept walking. The forest narrowed, the trunks crowding close, bark slick beneath the mist. The beam of my flashlight caught movement now and then, branches swaying, fog drifting, but nothing solid. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling of being paralleled. Whatever was out there wasn't random. It moved when I moved, stopped when I stopped. At the old clearing, the one we had used for staging, I set my pack down and crouched to check the ground. The tarp remnants from spring were gone, dragged off or rotted. A faint smell of earth and wet metal hung in the air, something old and buried. Then I heard it. A low click, like two stones knocked together. Once. Twice. Answering from somewhere behind me. I slowly turned. The light caught nothing but fog. But the sound repeated. Closer now. My pulse thudded in my throat. I swept the beam left to right. The rain seemed to hold its breath. Then came the grunt. Deep, resonant. Not animal, not human. Something in between. I froze. The grunt turned into a slow exhale, almost a sigh. And then I saw it. Between two cedars, 20 yards out, stood the shape. Upright. Massive. The eyes caught the light first, red amber reflections, flat and steady. Then the outline, broad shoulders tapering to long arms, fur clumped with moisture. It didn't flinch from the beam. It just watched me. My mind reached for explanations. Bear, trick of the shadow, someone playing a cruel joke? None fit. It shifted its weight. One hand brushed the trunk beside it, and I heard the bark creak. I should have raised my radio, called it in. But some deeper instinct told me to stay silent. For a heartbeat, we simply regarded each other. Then it stepped forward. The movement was smooth, deliberate. My flashlight trembled, scattering light across the trees. It stopped at the edge of the clearing, rain dripping from its coat and rivulets. The smell that hit me wasn't decay, but something wild, earth, pine, must, and iron. I whispered, "I see you, but I don't know why." The eyes blinked once, slow. It tilted its head, almost curious. Another sound came then from behind me, a branch snapping, heavy. I spun. The beam caught another pair of eyes shine, lower to the ground, then gone. My chest seized. I realized I was surrounded. They weren't hunting. They were guarding. I was standing in the wrong place. The one in front gave a low rolling sound, half growl, half rumble. The vibration hit my ribs. I took a step back. It didn't follow. Instead, it raised one hand, long fingers, dark hair, nails thick as bark, and pressed it against the cedar beside it. The gesture looked deliberate, almost ritual. Something in me understood. Leave. I backed away slowly, eyes locked on its outline. The others stayed hidden, but I could feel them moving with me, hurting me like shadows. When I reached the start of the trail, the air shifted, the forest exhaled. Then they were gone. I walked faster, not running, though every instinct screamed at me to. The trees thinned, the fog broke, and soon the faint orange blink of my truck's hazard lights shone through the mist. I hadn't left it on. The door was open an inch. For a second, I thought I saw a handprint on the condensation of the window. Wide, five fingers splayed. Then the rain washed it off. I climbed inside, slammed and locked it, and sat there shaking. The forest behind me was a wall of darkness. No movement, no sound. I turned to the ignition. Headlights flared across the trail. Something moved just beyond the edge of their reach, a silhouette melting into the trees. I drove until the road curved out of sight. Back at headquarters, I filed a brief note. Unexplained auditory contact. Animal activity uncertain. That was it. No mention of eyes or footprints. No mention of how the forest seemed to move as if one living thing. For weeks, I couldn't sleep right. I'd wake up to the rhythm of rain against the window, convinced I heard the low click of stones. I stopped taking backcountry shifts, told my supervisor I was burnt out. But part of me missed it. The stillness before the sound. The sense of standing at the edge of something older than words. I started researching old tribal accounts, ranger logs, missing person files. The patterns were always the same. Footprints that ended abruptly, campsite disturbances, uneaten food, silence. And always, someone reporting the feeling of being watched before vanishing or fleeing. We like to think that we had mapped every inch of these parks. We draw borders, name trails, post signs that tell visitors where it's safe to walk. But the forest doesn't care about our lines. It has its own laws, its own keepers. Every time I look at a map of Olympic, my eyes go to that valley. I trace the ridges, the creeks, the blank spaces where no one goes anymore. and I feel it watching back, patient as the tide. A month ago, another ranger mentioned hearing strange calls near Nolan Divide. He laughed it off, said it was probably elk. I smiled, nodded, and changed the subject. There's a weight that comes with knowing. You can't pass it on. You could only carry it. I still go hiking, but never at night. And if the rain starts to fall too hard, I turn around. The sound of it, the endless hush through cedar and fir, still pulls me back to that clearing. Sometimes, standing in my driveway on wet mornings, I catch the scent of pine and earth, and my breath catches. For a moment, I'm there again, fog curling around my boots, flashlight trembling, the forest holding its breath. I remember the eyes, steady and calm, as if measuring my worth. I remember realizing that I wasn't in danger. I was being tolerated. That thing, whatever it was, didn't hate me. It just wanted me to understand. I was a trespasser in a place older than language, older than fear. A guest who finally learned how small he was. I left that night alive, but I've never really come back. Because once you've looked into the dark and seen something looking back, you stop thinking of the forest as empty. You start hearing its heartbeat in every drop of rain. And you know, deep down, that it's listening.